from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep.
Hello, and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. And tonight we are going to talk about relationships, and it's going to be really interesting. I actually learned something, so this is going to be a lot of fun. And first of all, let's do our thank yous to our wonderful sponsor, Hydramay Skin Nutrition. And you can find them at www.hydramay.com. That's HYDRAME.com for all natural organic skin nutrition. Very interesting stuff for men and women, non-greasy and non-smelly. So only has a little light scent when you start to put it on, and then it goes away. So it's great stuff. Please do give that a try if you haven't yet. And tonight, this is going to be so interesting. We are going to talk to Paul and Patty Richards, and their book is Wild Attraction, The Energetic Facts of Life, A Ruthlessly Practical Guide to Extraordinary Relationship. And I think you guys are going to enjoy it as much as I did. And this is going to be a wild ride, so hang on to your hats. So welcome to the show, Paul and Patty.
Thank you. It's a treat to be here.
It is indeed a pleasure.
Yeah, this is going to be so much fun. Let's start out with having you guys give a bio about yourselves. You know, who are you? Where'd you come from? What caused this? And where are you going?
Well, gosh, I will start, if you don't mind, love, violating the lady's first rule. I am a martial artist, and also I was for many years an aerospace executive, and I enjoyed a career helping put planes in the air and spacecraft in orbit. In all of that, through all that period, I was fortunate to be able to get involved in a program at UCLA that was fledgling at that time, looking at non-ordinary perception, the capacity of people to perceive things that from a purely physical perspective they shouldn't have been able to perceive. And after that, subsequent to a few years working in that program, I was, without really ever realizing it, selected or chosen to be a part of an oral tradition of people who had developed a way to live a fulfilling sort of daily life or to live a strong and high-functioning ordinary life, and also to celebrate and develop the capacity to perceive, I guess you could say, as keenly and as far as their long tradition allowed. And we didn't have a name for it. It was not something that was public. It had no social agenda. It was strictly a love of a certain type of grace and the high level of human performance and exploration passed from one person to another for a number of generations. And I went through about 10 years of training while I was by day working on spacecraft and aircraft. By night, I was spending hours being admitted to this tremendous oral tradition. And the only thing that I had to do, the only obligation that was attached to all this was that I committed myself to someday similarly pass it on to someone else. I expected to find myself old and very wise and experienced before I made the attempt to do what others had done for me. But I met Patty, who was a nurse practitioner, nurse midwife, and she met the criteria. And I explained to her, well, you know, there's this really wonderful experience that is an intelligent, educated approach to the non-ordinary. And I don't think I was falling over myself trying to talk her into it because I felt I was not yet ready for the job of conveying it on. But Patty was fantastic, and she brought in not only herself, but said, well, I'd like to have this share this experience with a few other people. And I said, well, no one's ever done that in this tradition, but, you know, why don't we see what it would be like to do something other than person-to-person kind of passing this along. And that led eventually to us, although we didn't start out to have it, having a center that we ran as a school for 11 years called the Sinte Center in Oregon, and then to a higher level kind of lecture and seminar program we've run for the last 7. And through that time, we developed this material for Wild Attraction, which is really documenting our experience, and we felt so fortunate, incredibly fortunate, to have the relationship that we had, that we naturally, when you have something great, you want to share it. And we did that through our school and our other programs and realized a lot of it could be very useful to people in the world. And so we sort of came out of our center and thought, let's make a stab at sharing this incredible thing with more people. And that's my, in a nutshell, my story. Would you like to hear Patty's?
Yeah. Yes, we have to make it equal, so go right ahead, Patty.
And I can make this brief, because that was a great summary, Paul. Basically, I came from a background in medicine. I was a nurse practitioner, nurse midwife, as Paul mentioned. Excuse me, I have a bit of a cold. And always had one foot in traditional medicine and one foot exploring really non-ordinary perception, because I just think as humans we're more than just physical creatures. And so started this training with Paul in 1992, a very small training, which was great, and people just started showing up. So it has always been more of an apprenticeship, smaller program. Along the way, we began having very extraordinary experiences ourselves of you know, remarkable out-of-bodies across town, wide awake, and really saw what is possible in relationship. And out of that really has come this Wild Attraction material, saying there's an outer edge of what is human capacity to experience when you add the awareness of energy with your physicality in relationship. And not everybody's going to have the extreme, you know, out-of-body and all this stuff, but there's a lot you can do in-body. And it's really a pleasure for me to share how to apply perception in really functional ways that enhance people's experience of each other. So I'm just going to leave it at that and go wherever you'd like to go.
You know, I have a lot of questions for you about this material. And the first thing that I want to state, though, is that I really, really enjoyed the book. And actually, I mean, I have a background in martial arts and also nursing. And before I got the brilliant idea to go to med school at the age of 45, and have had a lot of crazy relationships. And so as I read your book, I was going, oh, my God, you know, this is so funny. And in my last relationship, my late husband was one of those guys who was everything. And as I looked at the categories, I was like, well, he was that, and he was that, and he was that, and he was that. He was one of the most dangerous people in the world, being a CIA assassin. But he was also one of the best people in the world, being a really good-hearted guy who fancied himself to be kind of almost a paladin, but yet with this really twisted side. I just cracked up reading through this book. I was like, you know, I wish I had had this book to hand to him when we got married, because it would have made my life a hell of a lot easier. And so I think first let's kind of explain, if you would, I guess if you – well, go through what you go through in your workshop, but, you know, kind of like the condensed what will fit into an hour version. And because I'm sure you've got, you know, the priorities down better than I could just from reading the book. So go for it.
I'll take a brief stab at it here.
Okay.
Basically, Wild Attraction starts with the premise that no one can really guarantee the fidelity of their partner, that we all have this kind of, what would I call it, complacency about relationship, that people don't get that it is an extremely powerful force, that if you don't educate yourself about it, if you're not aware of really this force that we're calling Wild Attraction, it'll sweep in your life oftentimes and knock over everything you thought you were doing, including your marriage or in your relationship. And so if you look around the culture, you will see lots of people doing bizarre relationship things, politicians, you know, having sex in the bathroom with boys or whatever it is. You're thinking, did they not think that there would be consequences? And we're saying, well, no, they didn't, because this force, when it enters your life, oftentimes all your values and morals and beliefs and commitments are kind of washed away. And it's a wild force, that there is a way to work with it and understand it and have it as an ally instead of having it be this thing that you think you don't have to pay any attention to. So that's really how the book starts out. And then it goes through 59, what we call energetic facts of life, where we're really mapping for people that it isn't just you in relationship. It's you and you have an energy field. And that energy field is more connected to your subconscious. And it is when you walk in a room, that energy field oftentimes is communicating in energy. You're communicating to people all the time. You know, in the first few minutes you meet someone, you are not verbally, but oftentimes non-verbally making agreements and commitments. You know, I promise to. I'm looking for somebody who will abandon me. Well, great. I love to abandon women after 3 months. And all this is going back and forth non-verbally. And you as a physical creature, your conscious will register, gosh, this is the man of my dreams. Because you've just had this nice psychological instant attraction that has nothing to do with what's real. So the book really walks through a variety of what we're mapping out as your energy system, and also what does a healthy relationship require? What are the mating rituals and the behaviors that actually invite a healthy relationship with someone else? And some of them are quite simple and deeply nourishing. So we're trying to make real your energy field, but also make real the fact that relationship requires you to actually learn about it, pay attention to it, have a model. Much as you would whatever your career is, you probably put a ton more attention, lots more attention on learning about that than you do relationship. You take it for granted and think it's inevitable that you're going to have this great relationship. And we're saying it's probably more inevitable that you're going to make some strange decisions and have some strange matches if you don't educate yourself a little bit more about what's going on. So I would pass it to Paul. Would you like to go from there?
Well, would you like me to continue, or do you have more questions?
Yeah, no, go ahead and continue.
Okay. I think I like to react to Patty. And the hearing that, what I'm thinking as you're speaking is one of the things about writing the book was we drew a line, not arbitrarily exactly, and we said we're really writing this book from the point of human functionality and above. So when we talk about people being unfaithful, let's say, or acting out, there are people who do all sorts of behaviors because they're injured or wounded or they didn't get what was needed, or possibly, I suppose, you could say maybe whatever character defects are. But when we talk about your life being, you being swept away or the structures torn apart, we're talking about high-functioning people who are capable of making a promise and keeping it in normal circumstances and who are not, who have undergone the necessary healing and exploration and psychological wakefulness. And wild attraction, it's not, not for people who aren't, functioning well, but it's geared for the premise that we can function well. And if you look beyond the level of the necessary healing and psychological wakefulness at what happens to people who are, very together, they, a person who would think, I can make a promise to somebody and I can rely on my strong character or I can rely on my intelligence to pick a partner, you know, what we're really saying is, if you eliminate injury and dysfunction, there is a force that is not internal to humans, but it's external to humans, and it's bigger than humans. And in the face of it, we need both curiosity and respect. And that, what I was thinking about when Patty was talking about where the book begins, was thinking about it really begins when we talk about gender. In similar, kind of as a metaphor, metaphorically referring to gorillas and how gorillas were kind of legendary or they were mythical creatures for a long time until someone brought back body parts or something from gorillas not all that long ago. And we are saying that what we think as male and female qualities as arising from us biologically and psychologically, to someone who's looking at energy, clearly masculine and feminine experience exists in the universe on a bigger scale. And it's not really inaccurate to think of it as having a kind of intelligence and a life bigger and beyond us and an agenda bigger and beyond us. Patty, you look like you want to say something. So given that that's really the starting point. The starting point is it's a bigger world, it's a bigger universe. What we experience is merely our own qualities, really are just us partaking of a much larger thing, rather like swimming in a big ocean, you know, being a part of the ocean, and the currents of the ocean move us. So if you take that view and you realize this thing, this intelligence external to us, can and wants to evidently bring about a wonderful changes in us if we adapt to it and learn to understand it and sort of learn to speak that language, it is a massive, powerful vehicle for all of the best kinds of human transformation. But if you don't recognize that you're dealing with something bigger than you, something more fundamental than you, a different scale than you, although it probably isn't antagonistic as a force in human life, if we don't respect it, try to understand it, and realize we can't master it, it tends to create chaos. And that chaos that we're describing is the chaos of daily life. It's the chaos of people being able, in an uncanny way, to find the person who plays the role that hits all of their weakest, most vulnerable areas over and over in new disguises. You know, how do people have the capacity to find the person they consciously don't recognize, but is in fact, you know, as Patty said, you know, the parent or the former lover who they really wish they could have changed or been different, and yet they can seek out and find those people again and again. It isn't just them. It's the sort of intelligence of gender and the energetic mechanics that links people together. And the next point in Wild Attraction is the idea that energy, you might say the realm of energy, is the actual central realm where relationship exists. We're saying that it's evident from a certain perspective that it's not physical and psychological space where relationships are negotiated or the real human connection occurs. It's the associated kind of space of energy and the substance of energy that comprises a kind of second body that is capable of communicating and merging much more powerfully and across time and space even in ways that we, if we only look at ourselves as physical creatures, we just aren't taking it into account. So all this is capable of reducing change, of creating mediocre relationships or at best sort of ordinary relationships if its dynamics aren't understood. But those forces, which are really, as I said, gender as an external force and the sheer mechanics of energy, they have a potential to yield something that we haven't even seen portrayed, not in movies, not in books. The magnitude of what it can do and the experiences and the change that it can endow is probably only represented in the poetry of Rumi. That's just about the only place we've seen the total magnificence captured. Patty, you're looking like you want to say something.
I'm just curious, Valerie, what struck you when you read some of those facts of life? Because many of them are inversions over how people normally think.
Well, the first thing that struck me was when you're talking about how the subconscious dance happens. And as you were pointing out earlier, and I want to reiterate that for people to start to understand, where there's this this nonverbal communication that is energetic that's going between people. So if you walk into a room and you're attracted to somebody, that it starts that communication right away. Your energy starts dancing, and like you said, you know, there's somebody who has abandonment issues, and then the guy says, "Great, I love to abandon women." You know, and, okay, well, let's go do this dance for a couple of years and or 4 months or whatever, you know, and going back and forth like that. And now the reason it struck me was not just because from an energetic standpoint you were talking about it, but also because those of us that have been into the metaphysical for a long time, we always say that you're going to attract to you the things that you need in order to learn your lessons until it kind of diffuses those hot buttons. You know, you heal the abandonment issue. You heal the, you know, the fear of whatever. And it's all about, you know, getting over the fears. And so I found it hilariously funny that this would be, you know, so much a part of our lives in that energetic way that we find exactly what we're looking for to push those buttons. And, you know, I've always said God has a hell of a sense of humor.
I think relationship is the divine comedy.
Yeah, definitely. And it was just so funny to see that. And I love the way you presented it because it was a different way than I've seen it presented before. And so I really appreciated that. And I wanted to make sure that we really kind of made that clear to the listeners that, you know, instead of going out and blaming somebody for being a jerk, it's like, okay, first of all, recognize that that's happening because your energy is attracting it because you have to work on it. So really, you should be going, oh boy, you know, I get to go dance with a jerk for a few months, you know, yeah. Or a lifetime in some people's cases. But really, you know, it's all about developing ourselves to be who we really are in the first place. So I found that to be really refreshing and hopeful. And I'm hoping that the listeners will kind of take it that way and will kind of start to get a feel for getting out of the victimhood and why does this always happen to me? You know, why is it always me? And, I mean, I do counseling with couples mostly, but I'll do single counseling too. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard this, why does this always happen to me? And I just kind of look at them and go, well, you know, that's a good question. Let's figure that one out.
I think that's a wonderful question. And by the way, I really appreciate your tremendous graciousness in hosting us. You've been very gracious with us. And I just want to tell you, I appreciate the opportunity to be a part of your world and to be a part of your work. And I'm really touched by your enthusiasm. And in hearing you talk, what I think is so hopeful about law of attraction is, yes, human beings, because we are not equipped with a complete model yet, maybe we never will be, we have things happen to us that we think are us, or that derive from a failing in us, or possibly we're hardwired, or born to recreate these patterns. But it's very empowering to get a more complete model that tells you that absolutely any person who has an injury or a deprivation has an unconscious capability to recreate that experience in the hope of converting it into a positive, and that's what everybody does. And it isn't a lack of character that brings about the recurrence of those patterns. It's a lack of information and training and a model to work from that allows you to take into account the total mechanic. And the total mechanic is the unconscious of a person doesn't know that they want a good mate. It thinks that they want a bad mate from the past converted into a good mate. And so you kind of, you loop through that, and it harnesses all this horsepower. And any good person, any person who you gave, you know, a clue, even a fragment of the information, would do much better. And it's not their fault. It's just the point in our development in terms of the models we have that I think is very discouraging for people. The wild attraction is really meant to be quite a powerful positive. Yes, it's not you. It's just a mechanic. And with knowledge and models, an open mind, some curiosity, a willingness to experiment, you don't have to keep recurring, having those things recur. You can experiment your way to a fantastic life and a fantastic relationship in just a couple of years. Patty, did you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I'd like to give maybe a couple examples, because what you're pointing to is really this horsepower of the energy system linked to your subconscious. And what I enjoy in the classes and things we do is we're making it more conscious. If your energy system is only linked to your subconscious, it may be acting out a lot. But once you make it conscious, you then have new choices. And we like to look at relationship not as a place to work out your stuff, but that's where you go for therapy. You go to your therapist and work out your stuff. But to make conscious, how do you attract people, and how do some of it is very mechanical, and that's what you were mentioning, Paul. There are a lot of things that are completely mechanical. For instance, Valerie, if a person who has what we call a feminine gender essence, if I have feminine really engaged, and we teach people how to do this, and I simply move a little bit of it forward into, if I'm trying to attract, say, Paul's attention or a man's attention, and then pull it back, it's this incredible signal. It's a seductive signal, and it's a very mechanical thing. I could line up 50 men and do the same thing and attract all 50 of them. It has nothing to do with them being my soulmate or this being the person I should attract. It's a very mechanical thing. So a lot of people are doing behaviors that they don't even know are mechanical, and they're interpreting them as, oh, wow, you know, this is the woman for me or the man for me. Other women, I'm just using women as an example, don't know that they're designed to move in energy. So if I've been married many years, you see a lot of people that the charge and the fun has gone out of their relationship because they're not using really these skills of this energy system to keep charge and passion alive. Paul and I, all day long, are playing with it. I walk up the stairs ahead of him, and in energy, I'm packing energy, say, in my hips, and it's an instant attraction thing. I'm moving a bit of energy forward and then pulling it back, and it triggers attraction. So the same behaviors that can cause really some strange attractions can also keep healthy relationships alive. So for me, the fun is pointing out you have this energy system. It's a little bit like having a sports car that nobody's taught you how to run. Once you learn, oh, yeah, it's mine, and it can either be working with me and causing great relationships, or it can be kind of running on autopilot, doing behaviors that I'm left to interpret because nobody has really showed me how it's designed. So does that help a little bit, though, in terms of what we're pointing to?
Yeah, and I want to get into the whole gender essence, turning it on and turning it off and all that stuff, too. But I did want to comment a little bit on that, because some people have that naturally. And the thing that really interested me in the book was when you were talking about how you illuminate a portion of your body only, or you do the entire body illumination, you know, when you meet somebody, rather than doing just the gender organs, which I think is what a lot of people do because they know that that's, you know, what's going to attract, especially, you know, women to men. I mean, that's pretty easy. That's kind of a given. Yep. Sorry, guys, but, you know, that's kind of the way it is. You know, I used to laugh when I worked in the ER, and there were all these cops around, and I remember this one guy saying, you know what, I'd get turned on by a fence. And I went, okay, whatever. It just cracked me up. But, you know, it's always, you know, one of the jokes around in the medical field that, you know, you don't have to do much to turn a man on, especially if you're a good-looking woman. But and nowadays a good-looking guy, I guess, too. But the thing that was really interesting for me is thinking back throughout, you know, as I grew up, I'm, you know, from the 50s and 60s, you know, the magical time in America, basically where, you know, freedoms were coming out before we started burning the bras and screaming at people and all that kind of stuff. But there was that time where it was like, okay, I want to attract a member of the opposite sex because I want to have that shared relationship. But women were coming into their power, and they were really saying, hey, you know, I have a lot more power than I thought I had, and I don't have to be either, you know, a career woman or a mousy housewife. I can be, you know, a powerful career woman who also takes care of the house and my husband and all this kind of stuff. So that was kind of interesting. I just kept finding myself reflecting back through the period of time that I grew up and seeing the difference between myself and younger people, because there's things that ladies of my era know how to do naturally that the younger ones don't, because it was a whole different era and there was a whole different reason for the attraction. And I think that what you see a lot of times nowadays, at least in my observation, you see the younger sexes are doing more of the illuminating of just the breast or the hips, you know, just those areas where the older people seem to be going more with a full illumination and saying, hey, here's the whole package, you know, take it or leave it. And the younger ones are going, oh, hey, you know, take this bait, come on over here. And I think that may be what some of the difference is, but I never thought about it from an energetic standpoint before. So this kind of opened my eyes to what was actually happening that I hadn't really noticed consciously. It's very interesting.
Right. You know, we've mapped out that there are different stages of relationship that start with friendship and then just a general attraction and, you know, your first contact with someone, and then when you're actually moving into dating and seducing and forming a long-term relationship. And we're trying to give people some, a map for certain behaviors are really healthy in certain stages of relationship. So, for instance, if you're in a friendship stage and you're walking around packing a lot of energy in your breasts or your hips, it's a very sexually provocative thing that really isn't what we call a mating ritual that's designed for friendship stage. It's going to, you're saying to somebody, see me just as a walking pair of breasts, not as a whole person. It's very provocative, it's manipulative, and I see a lot of the young kids, nobody is really differentiating. Oh, that's what you do when you've already tested for safety and availability. You're now in a seduction stage, or you're in a long-term relationship and you're trying to keep the passion alive. So people are, I think, scrambling for some models for how do I create healthy relationship? How do I let the person know me as a whole person, center-based and alive, not just a provocative, every situation isn't meant to be a provocative thing. So I think it's been helpful for a lot of people to realize, like animals and birds, there are certain mating rituals that you have to do if you want to attract the opposite sex, but there's a timing of when you use them that really makes a difference between attracting perhaps a healthy relationship and one that's really not going to give you what you want in terms of a functional person.
Yeah, exactly, and that this could end a lot of frustration. I mean, I talk to so many people all the time that they keep trying to tell me that, oh, you know, we're going into a new period of time and relationships are out. And I just laugh and I tell them, you're not getting it. It's all about relationship. Whether it's a relationship that's a loving relationship and a lifetime partner, or whether it's a business partner or just people that you have to work with, it's really all about relationship. And so if we could learn to get along better and to deal with each other honestly, which is what I see is a possibility with your book and with your workshops, because you're really teaching people how to be honest and how to, first of all, you know, figure out what they want and then display that, but also to be honest in their dealings with other people on that subconscious energetic level. And maybe they're doing it consciously and they're practicing it consciously, but it's going to come out, you know, in a way that other people don't notice. Like, let me give a couple examples there. First of all, Paul, thank you for acknowledging me and appreciating me. And I have to tell the audience that what he was doing was appreciating me because women need to be appreciated. And I was smiling as you were saying all that, not that I think it's insincere, but rather that I thought, you know, how many marriages would be saved if men would just say that kind of stuff to their wives? Hey, you know, I really appreciate that you did this for me. I really appreciate you left me loving notes in my lunchbox, you know, and let me know you were thinking about me, and so I could take that little brief moment during my hard day, smile, you know, and just little simple things like that are absolutely fabulous. So that was one of the things that I thought was a great reminder in the book, and, you know, really understanding how men and women tick. And then oh gosh, I forgot now what the other example was going to be. But basically, you know, as you look at how the people actually are wired, and I've said for a long time, men and women are hardwired to be the way that they are, and, you know, you're fighting genetics and, you know, God only knows how many trial and error things that happened to humanity before they became what they are now. But to really take those things and start to use them, and, oh, I know what the other point was. When you were talking in the book about actually practicing these things. Now, most of the time, I don't practice this stuff. I don't have time, you know, looking for a relationship. I'm busy, you know, working on myself right now. And so I tend to close myself off to any possibilities. And you were talking about, okay, you know, it's nice to have the guy know if he should open the door for you or not. Because so many men are afraid to open the door for a woman nowadays. You know, they're afraid that they're going to get smacked or, you know, called a male chauvinist pig or something. So I thought, you know, I look like hell today. I got to go to the post office. You know, I'm not dressed up or anything, but I'm going to see how well this actually works. And I haven't done this in a while. So as I was exiting, I actually could have got to the door like a step before this guy that I had no idea who he was, but I could have got there a step before him and opened that door myself. And I stopped myself. And I put my hand up to my collarbone. And just, I kind of glanced at the door and glanced at him. And he looked shocked. And then he opened the door for me. Just cracked up. I couldn't
help it. A traffic story.
It was, you know, so funny. Go ahead.
No, please. I didn't want to interrupt you.
Well, I was just saying, you know, I mean, how many women have been telling me, men don't open the doors for us anymore? And I said, well, can you blame them? They don't know who to open the door for. Men are confused, you know, because we changed over the last 20 or 30 years drastically. Now they don't know what their roles are. And, you know, that there have been too many women that have really gotten angry at men for doing simple little things like that. I happen to like having the door open for me, unless I'm in a hurry, in which case I'll just charge through the door myself. You know, but if I have time, I like those little gestures. You know, I like remembering that in this body I'm a woman. And that there are certain things that I like to have that nurture my soul as a woman. And there are, you know, things that men like to have, too, that nurture their souls as men. And like, I think back about my very dangerous husband, you know, and he would come home and I would say, why don't you go to the man cave for a while and, you know, chill out. And I would bring him his drink and, you know, just he'd go off for an hour or so and kind of let down from his day or do whatever he had to do. And then when he was ready to deal with, you know, what happened at the house and, you know, what's going on next, then he'd come downstairs and we'd have dinner and, you know, approach it from a much less confrontational spot than we would have if I had been at him the minute he walked through the door. And, you know, all he wanted to know was I appreciated that he was out there working for me. And I can't tell you how funny it was when I came home and we had just been engaged maybe a month or so and I had moved in with him and I was out driving, and all of a sudden it hit me. Wow, this is a guy who's 45 years old. He has never really even thought about marrying anybody else. So he's a confirmed bachelor. Then he falls in love with me. And, you know, I knew he was coming for years, but, you know, I mean, we just had this intense connection. And here he is taking on me, somebody he doesn't really know. He doesn't know if I'm going to be there for them. He hopes that I am. And he thinks that I am, which is why he asked me to marry him. But he doesn't really know. And I thought, wow, how shocking would that be for a guy who's a totally devoted male chauvinist pig of the highest order? and he was. And, you know, how weird is that for him to not know from day to day if I appreciate what he's doing for me? And so I came home and I ran up to him and I said, you know, I just realized this must be so hard for you. To take on this strange person, and I'm stranger than most, and to provide everything for me, not knowing, you know, do I appreciate you and do I recognize what you're doing? And I just wanted to tell you, I so appreciate that you're doing this for me. I appreciate that you're handling this. And then I know if I have a problem, I can come to you and you will fix it one way or the other, whether it's knocking somebody off or, you know, or just going and being reasonable with them. I never really knew, you know, but it was really interesting to see the change that came over him. It was like 30 years lifted off of him and he completely and absolutely relaxed. And it was such a shock to see that happen. And so I'm very interested in having people really kind of grok what's going on with what you're talking about in your book, because if people could treat their spouses, significant others, whatever you want to call them, with what they need to get through life gently and peacefully, oh my God, we could have a whole different planet that is truly paradise on Earth very quickly.
You know, your comments, Valerie, are so wonderful to hear because you really get what the book is about. It really is about creating great people and creating great relationships and taking the genders out of that whole mindset that we're opposites and that, you know, we're polarized and there's a battle of the sexes, and saying what happens when they begin to really, with curiosity, look at the other gender, appreciate them, actually figure out what they need and offer it and work as a unit. It's an amazing experience. It's certainly what we have going, and it's an amazing experience. And you're pointing to, in your example, a thing that we have quite a bit in the book, and we use a lot, called the five essential messages that everybody needs every day, this feeling that somebody sees you, that they appreciate you, that they're grateful for the things that you've done. And we iterate a lot of those things in the book. We discuss them. They're simple things, and I watch in the classes when you actually encourage people to freely go out and start verbalizing those things to one another, incredible change happens. And we notice, you were pointing to, say, the 50s and modern. I think there's a confusion in the genders right now that people are trying to say, well, there's not much difference. We should all be the same. And we're saying, you know, there is a difference. They're complementary. It's beautiful, the differences, and knowing it, you get to then participate in something that nurtures the other gender. And for us, when we look at males in energy and in the way they move, they are natural doers. And every day, any woman who's in a relationship with a male person, if she takes the time to appreciate that about them and say, point to their doing, I so appreciate the way you park the car, I so appreciate the way you did this or that, point to their doing, it's what nourishes male gender for whatever reason. It's a mechanical thing again. It has nothing to do with what's politically correct. That's what makes men flourish. As women, if we don't know that, we want to give them what we think we need. Women need to be appreciated for their beingness, for their essence alone. So if I say to you, Valerie, you know, you did a great job creating that outline, some part of you will say, well, that's interesting, because it's a doing message. But if I say to you, it's so wonderful to be in your presence, as a female person, you will take that in more and be nourished by it. Men don't know that, so they're giving women doing messages all day long, and women are giving men being it messages, and we're confusing each other. And once you point it out, you begin to see this beauty created where we're nourishing each other. And a lot of marriages and relationships begin to heal just by somebody being curious enough to ask, well, what is it that really feeds this person? I wouldn't give my cat bird seed, but why will I give my spouse something that actually doesn't nourish him? So I really appreciate listening to, you've really looked in the book and seen what we're trying to say, that there's something possible. There is a shift in what's possible in gender relationships. And a lot of it is this curiosity and willingness to do what actually works and to get out of really not examining anything and just reflexively living in ways that actually don't bring about this capacity for the genders to form a more powerful unit. What do you think about this, Holly?
Yeah, it's really, man, I so appreciate this book, you guys, because as I read this, I was like, oh, I kept getting all these little light bulbs going off. Because there are things that I know, that I understand about people, which is why I do couples counseling. even as a doctor, because, you know, I kind of get it. I could have written that book, Men Are from Mars, Women Are from Venus. You know, I just naturally get it. And I always thought it was so strange that people didn't understand how people are. But then I realized, you know, I tend to observe people and accept them as they are. And I look for the similarities and the differences and you know, try to figure out, you know, why is that? And so for me, this book is really valuable because I got to learn something new. And so, yes, people, I actually said that, you know, I'm usually a know-it-all, but, you know, and I crack myself up all the time. But basically, you know, as I went through this, it was so exciting to me to be able to go, oh, that's why that works so well. Because, like I said, I hadn't thought about it from that energetic standpoint. I tend to think of things from the soul standpoint and, you know, my own near-death experiences and all of my experiences in life, obviously. So I appreciate your experiences and actually putting it down so succinctly in this book, because I really think it's going to help people to be in relationship with much more peace. And really, we're all looking for peace, and we all need loved. And so, you know, what could be more important than that? And I think right now, you know, with what's going on in the world, we're actually being given a chance to pay more attention to ourselves and our relationships. So this comes along at a really good time. And then the other thing I want to... Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, please continue. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it was okay. I was just going to go on to asking you some other questions, but if you got something to say on what we've just been talking about, please do put that in now.
Well, I will say that we're sitting here talking to you, and what's going on for me is my sensation of how much this conversation is not a game. It's you know, it's for me the balance of the experience of the human race on the planet comes right down to how we treat each other, and it's particularly how we treat women. If you look at how a culture treats its female population, it's the single best measure of the effectiveness of a culture, how well they're able to perceive just how amazing and how rich and nuanced and sinuous the feminine is. And even though the male is special too, and they're equal in probably from a grace perspective, there's something about the feminine that is extraordinary and central to the human experience. And when it is not held in the center of human experience, it's an indicator that a culture is evolving off track. And the it is critical to our capacity to create more extraordinary people, which we have to do as we create more extraordinary things if we want to survive as a species. It's critical to put the comprehension of the feminine back where it belongs, which is it's the central issue. It's the central issue on Earth. If there were a St. Peter and I were to find myself, drinking bad milk or something and end up with an early demise and finding myself asked, what is the strangest thing on Earth? You know, tell me, what's the weirdest thing you saw? Of all the strange things I've seen, my answer would be, I don't understand the failure to grasp just how important the feminine is, the mystique, the magic, the value, the center of the human aesthetic, the careful, respectful, but also appreciative and playful treatment that the feminine deserves, I can't understand why it's not self-evident. To me, any woman should suffer because she's a woman, or be perceived as something sort of a male person but less, or not as effective, not as valuable because they are more finely tuned, they perceive a much greater palette of human experience than males do. They choose from a much greater array of options of who to be and how to be it. It's just a lot more going on. And it's incredible to me that women aren't equally paid. It's incredible that any form of brutality is allowed to continue, and it's incredible that we as males have not learned to speak the language of the feminine, and not learned that the feminine is gifted in bringing life into the world in a way that puts them in contact with a kind of a non-ordinary world or a mysterium tremendum, in a way that we, as males, we don't have a built-in experience that equals that. Until we develop it, the phenomenon of war may continue, because we're, you know, subconsciously we're trying to balance it. So what I'm really wanting to say is don't sleep with men who don't appreciate you. If people don't pay attention to you all the time, who don't recognize you're special, that you are special because you're a woman, don't stay with them. Don't try to relate to people who are male chauvinist pigs. We're missing it, and it's important that we're missing it, and we need to talk about it. And feminine people need to own it, and male people need to wake up. And if we don't do that, we're not going to create the society, the individuals, or the culture that we need. And Wild Attraction, in writing Wild Attraction, and the effort of spelling it out in the level of detail that we've spelled it out, I can tell you, if you're a male, you don't have the option to be silent. You don't have the option not to pay attention. You don't have the option to be unsafe. You need to put forth the effort to pay attention in a way that your male friends don't need. If you try to tell yourself, well, I don't feel like it, or I'm a man, or it's not as easy for me, it's fine, but you're contributing to the dumbing down and the shallowing out of human life on Earth. We can't afford it. Yeah. We can't afford to whitewash it. We can't pretend that there's no effort involved, and there isn't things that are non-intuitive for us that both genders need to do. We need to do them. It's not just for our gratification. We need to do them because it's the way it is. I would say in the strongest terms, learn about it, learn about what it really is, figure out what really works, don't accept less, and start with taking a really good look at what it means to be feminine on the planet and the role that it actually plays, and contrast that with the social position and the undercurrent of the battle of the sexes that pervades our culture. Patty, you're looking like you want me to stop and you want to say something.
I think it's great, and it's always interesting. It's so amazing to have a male who's a powerful male and who is, not someone who's being run by women, but who so respects women. And it's a wonderful experience. And the fun for me has been bringing Wild Attraction out, where we talk about, here's the gender differences and here's how they work together. More and more men are taking Wild Attraction classes, and they get it. But men are service-based. Ideally, men, there is a gallant service ethic in them that is fantastic, and a lot of men are simply waiting around for a job to do. And when you put them on it, hey, your role is to support the feminine. Hey, your role is to make sure that, you know, women are treated right, and that there is this capacity then to form a unit that is extraordinary. I'm watching really men come forward in droves in ways that is just phenomenal to experience. So I so appreciate that you do put women in the center, and I have had the biggest thrill this year working with men who are happy to hear. Yeah, there are, like you pointed out, Valerie, men are afraid to even open doors or do anything because we had to almost prove, great, we're not somebody's chattel anymore. Women are capable. But now we've proven it, and now it's time to work together as a unit. And what we're saying is, there is this dance, this lovely dance that happens between the genders, in which I'm standing in front of a door, leaving a space where a man can open it, and I'm saying to him, you're a great doer, and I get it, and I appreciate it. And he's saying to me, it's great to have you here. And there's something that is so honoring in both people with these simple rituals. It's like ballroom dancing, where neither person is trying to get power over the other person. They're enjoying the differences in our power and the delightful interaction that happens when people stop fighting or trying to make this be some kind of a battle. So,
yeah, exactly. And you know, as one who has always been strong and been the one that a lot of people have leaned on throughout life, and had to learn to be interdependent. I can tell you that even with the guy that was the king of all male chauvinist pigs and hated women, I turned that guy around in 14 months. And the way that I did that was by just loving him and showing him that I needed certain things, and you couldn't buy me, and you couldn't threaten me. You couldn't do any of the things that worked on other people, because one of the things that happens when you're really standing within your own essence, your own power, is that nobody can sway you. You know who you are, and you act accordingly. And so it was really interesting, to see him go through every gyration in the book and try every manipulation that had other women running in terror. And I just look at him, and go, does that usually work for you? Because, it's not working right now. And, just the frank honesty of it and appreciating him for things that he did made a huge difference. And, if I asked him to do a little job that would just be a real pain in the butt for me to do, he would go off whistling, and it didn't matter how long it took him to do it. When he came back, he was so happy because I asked him to do a job, and he did it. And I was like, wow, I was really impressed. And it just was so much fun, to see that and to realize that life could be so much more simple than we make it, because when we go into this combatant role, it never works. It doesn't work for anybody. And really, if you just stand within your essence without trying to gain power over the other person, and you just do appreciate them for who they are, but don't allow them to run all over you, they don't know what to do. I confused the heck out of my husband. And he even said a couple times, I don't know what you want. I said, I want you to love me. That's it. And that was totally outside of his realm of experience. He couldn't figure that one out. And I said, it's actually very simple. And, thank God that I had enough experiences in my life that I could handle that. And I needed to, because it was a spiritual connection, But after that, I thought, my God, don't put me through anything that horrible ever again. And now I'm looking for the candidate. I'm looking for the type of guy who is going to treat me totally with respect, that I don't have to shock into respecting me, that I don't have to maintain my essence behind the battering of this energy, this constant onslaught. I'm looking for someone that's really going to be an equal partner and a helpmate, and I think that's what everybody else is looking for, but they're afraid to voice that. And so if they look at your book, take your classes, I think they're going to be farther on the road on that. And before we run out of too much time here, if you would just go over the gender essence canisters, which was a new concept to me, I thought it was fascinating, about how you actually give those nonverbal cues and stand within your essence using these gender essences.
Please. I always love to hear you do it.
When we look at people energetically, you have a field around you, and that field has anatomy in it. It's similar to the physical body, but it's energetic anatomy. And one of the components that we notice in everybody's field is this thing that Paul actually has coined gender essence. And they look like little, almost small milk cartons of cloudy material that everybody seems to have some male and some female to varying degrees. If you are a heterosexual female, usually you'll have maybe 70% or 80% or 90% feminine essence and a smaller little component of male gender essence. Most of the time, if you either have those engaged and operating or in kind of a neutral position. So, for instance, Valerie, if you had gender essence in a neutral position, you would have both the male and the female parked over on your left side, and you would have, it's like taking off your sunglasses, the world has no particular color to it, just is. There's not a genderness about it. There are physical cues that seem to mechanically make these genders engage, and then it changes the way you see the world, the way you hear language, the way you move even. And for women, and in my classes, I have the men do it and the women do it. So you get to experience both the male and the female, because it's so valuable to experience the other person's perspective. If everybody listening to this, and if you were sitting there valley and wanted to try it, there are mechanical things. If you raise your hand, like if you take, say, your left arm and start flipping your hair, raise your arm as if it's over your head a little bit, which is probably why they use that in, say, porn and bondage thing. They'll have the hands up. If you also raise your heel a little bit so that your hips are off-centered, so if your heel is lifted and your arm is up, flipping your hair, any of that, it will engage this feminine, which means that it's moved from the left side into the front of your body and is sitting now parked more in front of your belly button or in front of that area. Once you have that engaged, all of a sudden you'll notice that there's more peripheral vision, it's a more inclusive, communicative position, and you begin to see the world through the feminine perspective. It's a valuable thing for men to do this too. You can, both genders can do this. If on the other hand you wanted to engage your male, you would take your left hand and sweep that feminine back over to the side. So you start with them in a neutral position under your left arm, neither engaged. You would put your hips straight so that they're just straight on. Maybe tuck a hand in your belt, you know, something like that. But your hands would be more at your hips. And move the smaller, in your case, Valerie, male gender essence, sweep that with your left hand and engage that in the front of the body. When the male is engaged, you'll lose peripheral vision a little bit. You will see more directly in front of you. It's a little more action-oriented, and all of a sudden, it's about what can I do? What is it that needs to be done? And it changes the way you literally perceive the world, your impulses, your responses. And that's a very simplistic way to describe it. We go into it a little bit more in the book. But from there, we really encourage people, if you're mainly a female person, spend 80% of your time in your feminine, with the feminine essence, engaged. It's your most powerful place. Excuse me. And from there, there are all kinds of things that once you've learned to engage, say, the feminine, or if you're male, engage the male, you will begin to have a different experience, because oftentimes people are walking around mixing them. They put a little bit of feminine, a little bit of male in, and they're giving off rather a confusing signal. People that meet them, you're giving off, I'm part male, I'm part female, I'm trying to make both people kind of happy, and it doesn't really satisfy the need of the genders to experience the purity of the other. So if I'm in feminine, I want to experience some part of the day raw male power. So if I'm in all feminine, Paul will be in all male. There's this charge and this dynamic combo that's happening. If I have the habit of mixing them, because I think it makes me feel a little safer to have male in there, it diminishes really what the gender wants to accomplish. So a lot of what I'm doing in classes, and it doesn't take very long, is really having people experiment with what's it like to be in fully in male or fully in female, what's it like to mix them, and what kind of response do you get? And it gives people really a wider palette of choice. They can then choose what kind of experience do they want to have. That's a very short, maybe slightly gobbledygook. We should add to that, Paul.
Well, nothing because of time, I think, okay. Except to say that when it's a beautiful thing to see a feminine person owning the femininity and comfortable and safe in doing it, it's a lovely experience. And it's not bad when that person puts that aside and does whatever they do for a living or comes from a different part. But every day I love to see a person celebrate and manifest the femininity or the masculinity that they have. And in a relationship, you want to go to the polar extreme and play off each other completely in whatever, you know, whatever your complementary genderness is, some part of every day, not every minute of every day, but it's part of the ritual that keeps things exciting and fresh over many years. But I know the time is probably very short. I'll just let stand your wonderful description. It's true and it's real. Not everyone reports seeing it this way because it takes many forms, but it often looks very much as Patty described it. If you you know, have a capacity to observe the energy state of people directly.
Yeah, it's really, man, we could talk for another couple of hours about this. It's just fascinating stuff. And we are out of time, so I do want to thank you for being on the show, and thank you for the work that you've done. You guys are wonderful. I so appreciate that you've put this together in such a really interesting manner. And why don't you go ahead and give out your website and contact information so people know where to get your book and where to sign up for classes.
Great. Our website is www.simtecenter.com. And that's S as in Sam, E-N-T-E, SimteCenter.com. And I want to say we've written the book so we could talk to people. We wrote it so we could talk to people. And the way we talk to people is on Simte TV. We've got an internet television station. And several times a month, we do live interactive television broadcasts where we take the book and go, Patty takes it in a very practical, pragmatic direction. I take it to its expanse. You know, where does it come from? What are its implications? How do you, you know, how does it apply to, you know, war and peace, or you know, all the kind of interesting theoretical side of it? But the book gives us a basis for really a wonderful experience with people. And I encourage, if you're interested, to check it out. Patty does a fantastic job, and it's great to have the visuals. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to say that.
It's been great being on your show, Valerie. Real pleasure.
Yeah, that's been wonderful.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thank you so much. And I just really hope that people will take advantage of your knowledge, because I think it's really unique, and it answered a lot of questions for me, and I just really appreciate it. So thank you. And, okay, we have been talking with Paul and Patty Richards, and their book is Wild Attraction, The Energetic Facts of Life, A Ruthlessly Practical Guide to Extraordinary Relationship. And so please do check out their website, www.sentecenter.com, S-E-N-T-E-C-E-N-T-R. And if you didn't grab a pencil and wonder what that is, you can look at the show info page, and that will take care of that. And also, we have a part two of Enlightened Medicine tonight. There's kind of a really nasty thing that's happened. I've invited a naturopath on to talk about her naturopath husband, who has one of the cures for cancer, and was kidnapped by the FDA, completely against all countries' laws and rules and everything else. It's going to be quite interesting. She'll be on for a full show on the 26th, but she's going to give us updates the last for 15 minutes after every show until we can do something. I don't know what. We'll see what we can do. So we have been listening to Paul and Patty Richards talking about Wild Attraction. That was a lot of fun, so please do check them out. And let's go ahead and let's see. Do we have Dr. Catherine on? Let's see if we've got a hold of her yet. And, okay, we're getting her. It's going to be just a few minutes here. And what we're going to be talking about is really one of the nasty things that the FDA does and that our government does to stop cures for cancer. And as I was alerted to this, I was frankly shocked, but I'm going to let Catherine tell you what has transpired, the whole version of everything. But the short down and dirty is that her husband was jailed, went through his time, was on probation. As soon as his probation was over, then they knew it was safe to travel. They moved to Ecuador, and they have their company working out of Ecuador. The FDA then sent someone to go kidnap him, which they did, and the Ecuadorian government was alerted, and they ordered the plane not to leave, and the plane left anyway, and then he basically disappeared. So I don't know if she's found out where he is at this present time or not. I'm hoping that we can get a hold of her. But you know how these things go, so, you know, Hopefully we'll have her on tonight. And if not, we'll plan on her being on another night. So I can tell you, though, that I think we've mentioned it before, that any time that you come out with a cure for cancer or any major disease where there's a lot of money being made, they're going to try to shut you down. And so what happens is we have people who are and have been killed and threatened and maimed. Their families have been threatened. This has been going on for a long time. And so this is not anything new. The name of the company is Alpha Omega Labs, and they have herbal solutions. And I think the name of the product, if I remember correctly, is Cancera. They've got all kinds of testimonials about how it's cured cancer. And, you know, you can't use the words cure, you know, and alleviate and things like that. There's about 20 words that have actually been patented by the AMA. So unless you're a licensed physician, you can't use them. This is how they get a lot of people. And so I don't know exactly what happened. I don't know the particulars in this case, but I wanted to get her on to talk about it and, you know, alert people to what's going on and see what we could do to help. I don't know if we need to do a letter-writing campaign or a telephone campaign. I'm sure that they probably could use some money to help fight, you know, get the lawyers and things like that. Okay, we do have her on the line. So do we have her on the air yet?
Yes,
hello,
I'm here.
Hi, Catherine.
Okay,
I don't know how to pronounce your last name. So
Caton.
Caton. Okay, so
yes.
This is Dr. Catherine Caton, and she's going to give us her story about what happened with this kidnapping of her husband. And I'm just going to let you go ahead and give the story and where we're at right now. And then if you would come on every week for about 10 or 15 minutes at the end of my regular show, I'll give you that time to let the audience know what we can do to help. And then I've got you scheduled for the 26th of January to do a full show also.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so welcome to the show. And why don't you go ahead and give us the particulars.
We were here in Ecuador. We had moved here after Greg's initial arrest in 2003 for selling unapproved FDA drugs. He served his time. He had 3 years of supervised release. We were uncomfortable with the rogue FDA agent always trying to get Greg back in jail, so we came here to Ecuador, where in their constitution we, the people, have access to natural medicine. It's very legal to do what we were doing in the U.S. here. So we came here, and we reopened our herbal business that was shut down by the FDA in 2003 in the summer of 2008. Well, the FDA tried to illegally kidnap him in November. They failed. This time on in the beginning of December, through paying off Ecuadorian police, which is very common in not just Ecuador, but apparently all over. The U.S. just does what they want. They do not file any legal extradition paperwork. They just go in and kidnap people they want. They illegally filed some false charges and basically just got them and kidnapped them and took them back to the U.S., where he's being held in Miami for violating his supervised release. And he'll probably be moved to Louisiana sometime early next year to await his sentencing, which we're not sure what's going to happen.
This is a nightmare.
Yes.
If I remember correctly, when I read the initial thing that someone sent me, they said that that his probation was over And so all the stuff in the United States was done, and then you guys moved and set up in Ecuador. Is that correct?
Well, he had a year and a half left, but they were, and we had a hearing in October of 07 to get the rest of his supervised release dismissed. But I had an employee who had embezzled money from our company, our vegetarian food company, during Greg's imprisonment, and she was working with the rogue FDA agent to get Greg and me put in prison to cover her deeds. And they were going to come out at this hearing and saying that we were making our herbal products again to get us back in jail. So Greg was legally going back and forth to Ecuador at that time. I had already moved here. And so we just didn't go back because there is no justice in the justice system in the U.S.
Yeah, this we know. People that are aware are quite aware of that. And this is another thing that I thought was important for people to hear about, to know that, you know, this is happening all over the place. And those of us that are in the medical field, we know this stuff's been going on for a long time. You know, Big Pharma doesn't want to have any people live through their chemotherapy for longer than they can milk them of all their money. And
exactly.
So we've got that kind of crap going on. And, you know, pretty much everyone who would not give their miraculous cures to Big Pharma was either, you know, threatened or killed or jailed. And so this is another black mark on the history of the FDA, which in no way has done anything to protect the American public. And
exactly.
So people need to really understand this and understand how corrupt the system is and how evil it is.
Yes. Greg wrote about our case and makes that very argument beautifully in an online book that he has started, which is www.metatopia.org. And it's a very wonderful read.
Yeah, so I really hope the listeners will go and take a listen to that. And what can we do right now to help you guys, Catherine?
Right now, we have to be patient and sit and wait. We will be setting up a legal fund, possibly, which when we get things set up, I can forward the information to you.
Okay.
And just, I wish there was some way we could all get together and fight the corruption for once in a while, once and for all. But I just, how do we do that?
Well, the main thing is through grassroots participation, you know. Shows like this one and other ones, get on as many radio shows as you can talking about this and letting people know what's going on out there. I would say that you definitely should have a blog with this going on with all the details and you know, all every piece of evidence that you can come up with to show the abuse by the FDA. And start bringing some pressure to bear against these people who are going against the laws of the United States, against the Constitution, you know, things like that. I mean, they have no right to do what they're doing. And so it's going to take everybody standing up and saying, no, you can't continue with this.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what has to happen. It's going to take all of us to stand up.
Yeah, and it's got to happen,
back.
Because if people think it can't happen to them, they're going to be very dismayed when the stuff starts happening. I mean, right now we're on the brink of being Nazi America. We're very much on the brink.
I think we're already there. I think you're already there.
Yeah, so people have got to stand up now while they can, because pretty soon there won't be any ability to do that if things keep going on the way they're going.
Exactly.
So, we'll check with you again next week, Catherine, and see what's going on with that. In the meantime, listeners, please do go and check out metatopia.com and, you know, let's see what's going on, and please pray for Greg and You know, that's the best thing we can do, is pray that the truth comes out and that actual justice is done. Not justice by a corrupt system, but justice of, you know, God's justice, basically. You know, justice of divine source. And, you know, restore balance. So, okay, well, good luck to you, Catherine. Thanks for coming on
the
show.
You.
And we'll check with you
God
again next
you.
Week. Thank you. You too. Okay. Well, that gives you some things to think about, listeners. Let's see what we can do to right the wrongs that are being done. And our show has been brought to you, of course, by Hydramay Nutrition, hydramay.com, HYDRAME.com, skin nutrition. Wonderful, organic, all-natural products for your skin, for men and women. Please do check them out. And I'm so grateful that they are our sponsor. And until next week, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty-night. Do 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 do